This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I stand on the edge of my street with a knife out in my back.
Cost of distemper.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's good. Yeah. That's fucking good, though. 26 cents to a dollar, like, it makes so much sense. Like, why wouldn't a betting man? I think everyone's a betting man at some point in their life.
But they're not. Veterinarians don't take risks.
Right.
And, you know, that's probably maybe another reason why people aren't having that much fun in the practice anymore, is because people are not taking risks. People are not. I had, before I retired, in December, I would have new veterinarians coming out being like, they told us not to do this in vet school. And I'm like, it's a block Tom, mm-hmm. You know? What do you mean? What are you going to send them in the emergency room? They're going to sit there for 5 hours? That cat's going to sit there blocked for five more hours? What do you mean the vet schools are saying that should be referred? Maybe once you unblock it and have to hospitalize it overnight, okay, I can buy that argument. 24-hour care, sure. But why wouldn't you unblock it? What are some other ones? Cystotomies. Mm-hmm. Oh, we got to refer that out. A cystotomy is easier than a spay. And there's nothing routine about a dog spay. I don't care what the fuck people tell you. Every dog is different. And every dog, you're still sitting there 2 hours later. Are the gums still pink? You know? Do you want to put a probe on that abdomen? Let's make sure there's no, you know, a lot of fluid in there. Yeah, I mean, my one thing that scared the shit out of me was the dog spay. And that's when I started going to stainless steel suture. And I was like, you use stainless steel, you're not PDS? I'm like, stainless steel, number one, absolute not security. Number two, will never dissolve. Works for me. I don't have to worry about. I had a stump pyometra once from a suture reaction on the uterus. I mean, I had to go in there and resect away and be careful I didn't hit the ureters. But, you know, shit, things happen. I mean, but that's why, you know, you got to do what makes you comfortable, what you really feel like you can do. But you also got to push yourself out of your comfort zone, too. I mean, there's a lot of things that you will be able to do. You know, people are like, "Oh, I'm so sad we had to euthanize because of cost of care." Well, if the only option you gave them was a referral, mm-hmm.
What else are they gonna do?
Well, exactly. I mean, if their options are either you do it or we euthanize, do it. And then, you know, the other thing is, like, I pray to God these early career vets are at places that have that mentorship. Now, I've heard early career, you know, young vets say, oh, no, I need to go to a practice that, you know, has 9 doctors and that has ultrasound and has this and has that. Okay, why is that? Oh, because I need to learn how to use that stuff and there are going to be 9 doctors there. You're telling me there's 9 doctors that actually truly are there to mentor you? That's their whole goal? That's not the case. And especially if it's a corporate-owned practice, Because a lot of these veterinarians are now going to these corporate-owned practices because now it's a job, right? Because, number one, most veterinarians know they're never going to hit those ridiculous numbers that corporates want them to hit. Because what are they going to do? They're going to get rid of them? Well, there's a veterinary shortage right now. They have absolute job security. So, yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen. So I, you know, as I sit here and I'm drinking my Monster and, you know, my vape pen's kicked in a bit. I mean, it really gets me to start thinking, yeah, I mean, that I can go down many rabbit holes on what's happened in this profession that's hurt. But that's not why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm trying to do things to help, you know, these early career get out there and do well. Like, I want to see all veterinarians succeed. But if you don't push yourself out of your comfort zone, you're not going to. Did you really pay $300,000 in tuition just to give vaccines and do ear cytologies and maybe give cytopoint injections? Is that truly what you signed up for? How many of your classmates would say yes to that?
I have no idea. Sometimes, I mean, comfortability is a curse for them. That I think that's the biggest issue and why I'm so...
What'd you say?
Comfortability.
Is a curse to them.
Yeah.
And they're going into a profession that I said is what? A fear of change because everyone's comfortable.
Sure. Well, I mean, that goes back to the EQ debacle, basically. Everything stems back to EQ for me, at least in the stage that I'm at, what I'm experiencing. I really strongly feel that this lack of EQ... is we're talking about the comfortable, you know, zone, and there's those people that talk about the three zones, what you should be in. You know, you have your comfort zone, you have your learning zone, and you have your anxiety zone, right? And I think the biggest issue for them is they're so afraid of getting to that anxiety zone that they stay out of the learning zone, and they're not practicing. They're trying to perfect. And again, going back to the IQ EQ problem, that's where we need to put the change. It's practicing for a reason. Of course, at the end of the day,
because
do
we
no
haven't
harm.
Perfected it.
Right.
And guess what else? We're practicing law. No one's perfected law.
Sure.
So that whole concept of perfection in the profession, that needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that approach stems from the ivory tower teachings of veterinary institutions?
I think it stems from the fact that most of the professors at these ivory institutions, at least when I went to school, were professional academians. They didn't know what it was like in real practice. They just thought, you know, I mean, honestly, it gets to your head after a while, like everyone who's coming to see me at this institution is gonna do a CT, MRI, blood work, X-rays, ultrasound, you know, 15 grand in chemo, when that isn't reality. But, you know, they're telling us, oh, this is what it's got to be. This is how it's going to be. And it's just, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And so I think the fact that you don't have a lot of people that were doing private practice allowed to go teach, or even I made this argument with Peter Weinstein, have a lot of these private practitioners go in there and do one or two lectures, not even teach.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, that sounds fun and fine and dandy. That new insulin that you only have to give one shot a week is amazing. But you got to tell your client that's $10,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you how we really do it. You get the Vetsilin because it's only $60 a bottle, and we go from there.
Yeah.
Right? And let me tell you, blood glucose curves, they're shit. Sorry. I mean, are you truly going to put in a vet school to do a true... blood glucose curve in a vet school, they would put in jugular catheter and hospitalize the dog for 3 days so they could get real numbers.
Sounds expensive.
But are you still going to get real numbers when a dog is in a freaking hospital?
No. No way.
Right? So we started putting the glucose monitors on their skin. And everyone's like, oh, those aren't accurate. Well, you know what? When I see that the dog is running high at home, guess what? It's high.
Right.
Or it's running low at home. Guess what? It's low. I can count on those numbers. I'm practicing medicine, not science here. Right? We can be off a little bit here or there. Now, not on all your drug doses, but yeah. If a dog needs 0.22 mLs, I'm sure you'll be okay with 0.25
mm-hmm.
or 0.2. Trust me, I think you'll be okay. But that's the problem with perfection again. They're like, oh, you got to have these very, very accurate numbers so we can do this graph and then we'll... But you're still going to guess on what dose of insulin mm-hmm. to go to. It's not like you're going to say, oh, off of this Excel spreadsheet, we'll run a linear regression and we'll know exactly how many units to give your dog. Fucking bullshit.
Yeah, if it was that easy, you wouldn't need to do anything. You just literally look at the numbers. But right. It's never about the numbers. Like, at the end of the day, every single type of physiology, like physiologic response that's happening in the body is going to be different per patient, right? Like you said, every spay is not the same. Your deep-chested, you know, big, giant lab, fat lab that's coming in, is you're not doing the same spay as
now we're supposed to spay it a year and a half old.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's a whole nother discussion. Yeah, but I mean, I think going back is the gold standard for a lot of these people that are coming out of vet school seems to be the only standard that they want to do. And I spoke with a really wonderful shelter veterinarian back in Indiana when I was at one of the conferences, and she's like, we don't have that gold standard doesn't exist. You know, it would be great if it's achievable. And a lot of shelter veterinarians probably can attest to this, is they do something, you know, spectrum of care. Well, she called it creative care. And I thought that was badass because she's like, you got to get creative. I mean, veterinary medicine is a MacGyver. You got to be Dr. MacGyver at some points, especially when you're in weird realms like exotics.
So you're going to make your splints out of duct tape?
You got to do what you got to do to get the job done. Who knows? I've seen crazy things. I've seen patients come in stabilized from somebody. I'm like, wow, like splints, like you're saying. I've seen crazy splints. But, I mean.
Splints that do nothing.
Right, exactly.
But they charge them $800 to apply.
Cost is, I mean.
And see, but that's what gives us a bad light, right?
Yeah, of course. It makes you look incompetent.
Well, someone who's doing something that's way over their head is truly what gives us a bad light. Like, if it is over your head, be honest with the client. Hey, this is so far over my head. Let me refer you down the street. Even better, a little trick for all you early careers. You find out the personal cell phone of every surgeon, internal medicine, neurologist, oncologist, and you become their best friend. You send them Christmas gifts, Christmas cards. You buy them birthday presents, whatever. You do that. You want to know why? Because sitting in an exam room one, you're like, hold on a second. I'm going to text a surgeon really quick.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I would get answers within 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think that blows a client away?
No. They're good.
It's all about playing the game.
I love that you say that. Exactly. It's a big game, but at the same time, it all goes back to what the best care you can give to the patient is. Even if it's the care that you're not giving, the advice that you're not giving, that you, like you said, you're having all those people in your Rolodex, in your tool belt to say, hey, that's called transparent treatment. That's what I call transparent treatment. Because if I can sit there and say, hey, look, I'm really not that confident on this surgery, and going back to what you said earlier, I would love to refer you here, but if you cannot afford it, do not euthanize your pet. I would love to attempt it. And in my attempt to do this, I'm going to reach out to the people that I know have done it. I'm going to learn myself, whether it be through books or videos or whatever, and I'm going to apply those principles to this procedure. And like you said, everyone that graduates from vet school is competent enough to at least know that. Or at least we hope they should be, right?
Well, I'm going to make an argument really quick, because not every veterinarian that graduates on a Saturday is ready to practice on Monday.
No, not ready to practice. I'm talking but about the ability to reach out.
That's the whole thing. The whole thing is that's the way this profession's looked at.
Yeah.
You're ready to go. Like the pillar effect? Mm-hmm. For all of those students that are not at Western, but are at the traditional or case-based learning type schools, you know, they have clinics on board. I want to know how many of you have actually done a procedure your senior year, and especially if your surgical rotation is the last one you have. I remember at Illinois, I signed up on my last rotation 2.5 weeks before I graduated. And it was, I finally looked at the surgeon and said, because it was emergency surgery mm-hmm. stuff. I was like, okay, I'm doing this GDV. I'm doing this pio. I'm doing this C-section. You're my assistant. Mm-hmm. You stand over me, but I'm going to do it. And he's like, what? And I'm like, dude, in 2.5 weeks, I'm going to have a license that says I can do this. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, good point. Yep. And I got to do all those. Walked into Canyon Animal Hospital July 4th, 2001. I spent a year at a different practice, got totally screwed over by the owner. He said he was going to mentor me. He said he was going to give me all this extra money if I hit these benchmarks. He saw that the practice was going to hit some benchmarks. So he started coming in at 2 in the afternoon instead of at 9 a.m. Hmm. So another red flag, early career vets. If that's the situation you're in, get the fuck out of there. Yeah. So I walked in July 5th, 2001. Doberman Pinscher. Carmelo, I'm going to start crying. He was my kennel attendant for 28 years. 28 years. He was my facilities manager by the end. But he grabs me. He's like, you're the new doctor? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, this dog, it's bloating. It's bloating. Look at his stomach. I wasn't there more than 20 seconds. First day on the job. Dr. Hamill looks at me. He's like, well, I'm like, I'll do it. Because I've already done them. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Went in there and did it. Save the dog's life. But schools don't prepare students like that. They don't prepare. So if you don't feel prepared, it doesn't mean internships are great. If you want to be a specialist, please be a specialist. We need so many freaking specialists. Mm-hmm. 'Cause those specialists hopefully will also go back and educate the kids in school.
Right.
But if you just want to go out and practice, find a practice that's you. Find a practice whose culture is you. And it'll take trial and error, but not every practice is the same, right? But if you have a mentor that's truly going to be mentoring you, they're going to be there holding your hand if you need it. They're going to be backing off if you need it. They're going to be have their phone on them 24/7 if you have a question. Mm-hmm. 20 former employees I put in the vet school. 20 former employees are still in the veterinary profession because I mentored them. As soon as I knew an employee was thinking about becoming an RVT, a licensed tech, or a veterinarian, put them under my wing. I said, okay, this is how we're going to do it. See one, do one, teach one. That's what I always told them. You saw a catheter put in, do a catheter. Now teach the new person how to do it. That's true mentoring, right? The idea of the education that you're getting, don't get me wrong, like some of these vet schools are fucking amazing, but some scare the shit out of me, mm-hmm. right? And they need to change too, because they don't know what their students are getting. Like there was an article, I don't know if you read it. How many vet schools do we need to open to make up for the shortage? What are the pros? Pros are people like me and you who are grinders, probably not the highest GPA out of college, have a better chance of getting in, right? And then you don't have to worry about that EQ-IQ problem because the grinders have the EQ. They've learned the game, mm-hmm. how to get there. What are the cons? Who the fuck are going to teach these kids? There's a veterinarian shortage already, and you're going to tell me you're going to get veterinarians out of private practice for a quarter of the salary to teach veterinarians?
The IQ will then teach the EQ, and it won't be at all efficient.
Exactly.
It'll be awful. It sounds terrible.
But who's going to teach at these new vet schools that are opening up? Who?
Yeah.
Tell me.
I wouldn't do it. But at the same time, I think that if they changed around the specific curriculums, and again, I can only speak on the curriculum I'm in, which I knew would be the best that I thrive, because I thrive in problem-based learning. Someone told me before I went there, they said, in vet school, the most you're going to learn is what you do outside of vet school. And I was shocked to hear that in the beginning, and I didn't understand it. I was like, there's no way this is true. That's bullshit. What I'm going to learn in school, they're going to prepare me for, you know, in the real world. But then I started going to emergency hospitals. I didn't have any emergency experience. Well, my curriculum in the beginning did not include emergency medicine. I mean, sure, you break down cases and it's an emergency, right? But I didn't quite understand the levels.
Pace?
Yeah, the pace of what it was, right? And so I said, you know what? One day a week, I'm going to go to a practice. And I just went and I said, hey, can I work for free? And they're like, yep. And I was like, cool. I'm going to work my ass off for you. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it became repetitious. And I have learned so much being there that it reinforces my learning while I'm in the institution. I can't read from a book and say, oh, I got it. Sure. I have to see the GDV.
Right. The dumbest thing you can ever have, in my opinion, is surgical lectures
mm-hmm.
with pictures.
Yeah.
There's no blood in the field.
Yeah.
Right? You make your first
perfect.
You make your first skin incision the first time in your life, and there's fucking blood, right? You're like, oh my God, cautery gauze.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've already gone through the dermis. Mm-hmm. You haven't even gone through the sub-Q or even the mm-hmm. abdominal wall yet. And it I agree with you.
Yeah.
So, question that came up while you were telling me that. Number one, how many kids are in your vet school class?
Roughly 112, I believe.
112.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those 112, how many are doing what you're doing? Honestly.
I mean, doing what I'm doing as in?
Not as in going to an emergency.
Doing that? I'd say probably, I don't know, it's hard to say, probably less than 10.
So less than 8% of your class. So you're telling me that 92% of your class are counting on vet school to prepare them for practice.
A bajillion percent. Like, I am fairly confident in that.
You see that as a problem?
Absolutely. That's why I'm not doing it. And that's why I'm encouraging those around me to go out and learn those things.
And then the other thing you're talking about is you're talking about experiential learning. That's what they teach you in vet school, whether it's case-based, problem-based, traditional. It's experiential learning. Like, you're going to learn through experience, mm-hmm. right? Well, in my dissertation, I'm arguing you need pre-vet school experience to get in. Now, if you look at the list, some schools do require 300 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Some schools only require 100 hours. There's a good amount of schools that require 0 hours. How the fuck are you going to know if you want to be a veterinarian if you've never walked into a veterinary clinic? And don't give me you love animals.
Mm-hmm.
And don't give me I used to take my cat to the vet clinic. You don't know what you're about to experience. You don't know what it's like to have a client chew your ass out. You don't know what it's like to have your technicians have a love triangle going on. You don't know what it's like to have receptionists that come in hungover or slam the phone on clients. You don't know all the ins and outs. And everything I'm talking about are the soft skills. The soft skills. And you, by doing what you're doing, you're learning your soft skills. You're learning your soft skills, how do you handle an emergency situation? You're learning your soft skills through your general practice, how you deal with the general public. You learn soft skills from your job as a waiter on how to read situations. And that's why when I look at you and I said, I'm very confident in you and your ability, I think that's the case. But I'm also going to tell you that there is going to be a time when you're like, what the fuck did I do this for?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure you've hit that through your education, right? But the good thing is that, again, you as a grinder knew I got to learn emergency medicine. And why isn't that part of the curriculum? We're starting freshman year. Students have to go to emergency clinics, right? Or students have to go to dermatology.
Yeah.
If you're an early career vet and you don't know dermatology, you better learn dermatology. Mm-hmm. If you're a senior year vet student, do two of your externships at dermatology clinics. Because 90%, at least here in Southern California, is licking of the feet, licking of the groin, scratching at the face, ear infections. Guess what? That's called Cytopoint. Cytopoint
Apoquil.
Yeah, Cytopoint Apoquil. I love Cytopoint. I'm a huge Cytopoint
fan. I think it's great.
Apoquil. I think the allergy index is too high in California because we don't get rain, right? We don't get rain. That's why we're always on fire, because we don't get rain. Mm-hmm.
We have seasons.
You have allergy seasons.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's why.
And just so you know, right now is a day.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Kids are getting shorter. Mm-hmm. We're going back into tree season. So the poor man's allergy test, you can do for your clients in the room, and they'll be fucking blown out of the water, is open up your local newspaper and look at the allergy index. Yeah. And say, oh my God, your dog's allergic to trees.
Yep.
And then they're going to say, well, I have trees in my backyard. No. This is Southern California, right? Santa Ana winds, sky's the limit, right?
Right.
Because everything that's on the ground. Fires, smog, you name it. Exactly. But those are little tricks. Like that little tidbit right there, you just explained to that person that they have tree allergies. Then you could go into interleukin 31. And then, you have microscopic cracks in the skin. And when we found out pollen gets through the skin. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it releases this. And my argument about Apoquil, getting back to that, is that when you go Apoquil full dose in California, works like a charm. But you can't do that for more than 14 days.
I was going to say long term.
So you got to go to half dose. Mm-hmm. What does the dog start doing?
Itching.
Why? Because Apoquil works on the amount that's in the body to tell white blood cells, hey, stop making interleukin 31. Or Cytopoint, it doesn't care how much fucking interleukin 31 is made. It's going to code it. It
disconnects that itch receptor.
It's going to code it, and it's going to hit the nerve ending and bounce off. So, but then, I see a lot of veterinarians that just do Apoquil all the time because they're too afraid to Cytopoint because they don't like change. Oh, I'm going to give Rimadyl, the injectable liver failure dog. Mm-hmm. But they won't do the injection for arthritis in dogs because it's new. See, I was a different cat. I was the first one to have a tablet ultrasound. I was the first one to have that digital cytology machine from IDEXX. Mm-hmm. I was the first one to have the first IDEXX urinalysis machine in Southern California, the first clinic. Because I love my toys. If it makes my job easier, I'll do it all day long. But yeah, there's a learning curve. But guess what? Those machines are so easy to use, any technician can use them. I didn't have one CBC machine, I had two. I didn't have one blood chemistry machine, I had two. I didn't have one PTPTT machine, I had two. Because you never know when you were gonna need it, and I knew everyone can use it. And so I was not afraid to say, hey, you know what? Let's get some blood work on your dog. I'll get you results in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time anyone, even in an emergency room in human medicine, got a blood panel back in 10 minutes? I mean, but that's playing the game. It's all about, you know, just, it's not, I don't want to say it's smoke and mirrors, but it's baffle them with bullshit.
Yeah. But that only gets you so far.
But it doesn't, though.
But it's worked for a lot of people. I know a lot of veterans that have. But it builds trust. I agree.
It builds trust. You know? And let's say that blood panel comes back and you're like, oh, what is this telling me? I have no idea. Get on the phone with the intern at IDEX. They'll tell you what's going on immediately, right? The little portable EKG machine. You know you could do real time with a cardiologist? If it is a real emergency, they'll get on there. And guess what? You could say, hey, I need to get a cardiologist on the phone right now. Run this EKG. It's going to be $400, $500, $1,000. But guess what they'll do? They'll be like, yeah, go. Most of them will. Because if you're saying, I'm getting this person on the line, they'll be like, holy shit, okay, this is serious. Yeah. Instead of, oh, I'm going to send you your cardiologist. I'm going to send you the emergency clinic.
No, you're going to call the cardiologist that you've been sending birthday gifts to, and he's not going to charge you anything because he's your buddy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But that also comes back to another thing I want to teach everybody. Get to know all your reps.
Yeah.
Get to know them really well.
Love the reps. Love them.
Do you know how many turn the reps away at the front desk?
Why? Why not have another tool in your tool belt?
Because they don't want to be bothered talking to
them. Oh, because they don't have time? My favorite thing. I don't have time. That's the biggest complaint for me. I don't have time for that.
Like, I tell you the one thing that I didn't have time for, and people say, oh, my God. My clients knew I would never get on the phone with them. Send me a fucking email.
Mm-hmm.
Text me. I don't have time. And people are like, what? And I'm like, well, I was very successful. You look at anything written by Mark Cuban or Warren Buffett, they never get on the phone during a workday. They will never get on the phone with anybody during a workday because it takes too much time. They'll call them after work.
Sure.
So use the technology to your advantage. My clients, and my wife thought I was a fucking idiot, but only two took advantage of it. Every one of my clients had my cell phone number. Mm-hmm. Every one of my clients had my quote-unquote personal email address, drgcah@gmail.com. But guess what? drgcah@gmail.com wasn't my personal email, but it went to my phone. So if a client had a question, I could write back to them. I didn't even have to go and take emergency calls anymore at night. I never had to be on call. Hey, Dr. G, I would get a text. Hey, Dr. G, you know, Poofy has bloody diarrhea. Eating okay? Yes. Acting normal? Yes. Energy okay? Yes. I'll see you in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell him Dr. G said to get you in. Clients, you do that little thing. Clients were like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And these are things, again, soft skills that are not taught or said to you. If you told one of your professors that, oh my God, yeah, I'm going to give my clients my cell phone number, they're going to tell you you're fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they have an email. You're fucking crazy. Clients will not take advantage of you. And if clients take advantage of that, like I had two that did, two or three, I just hit ignore on my cell phone.
Yeah, or you call them out. Or call them in. That's the biggest thing.
No, call them back at 3 a.m.
Automate calls to them. That would be funny. No, I mean, I think that's important. It all stems back to value. And I think the value, if you give – veterinary medicine is a business. I don't care what you say. At the end of the day, just like human medicine, you got to make money to stay open. You got to make money to save lives. It is what it is. Whoever says that it's not true is a liar. And they don't want to see that. I think giving your clients that value proposition, and again, you need to understand, is it worth my time, effort, and energy to give this person my phone number, my email? I'm a little indifferent. I would rather have a work phone number and give them that and say up till 10 p.m., you know, if an emergency, text me this time because I don't want my phone blowing up. I don't want to mix work and play at the same time. But if I can answer that simple question, like you said, with the diarrhea, oh, lethargy, okay, none of that. That's fine. We can take care of that morning. Or I could say, that sounds pretty serious. You should probably go to an emergency because I'm not getting out of bed to come take care of your pet. So I think giving clients that value will give better healthcare to their patient, to their pet. It will also put more money in your pocket at the end of the day. The next time they come in and you say, oh yeah, we should probably do X, Y, and Z. You know, we should probably do that. They're less likely to question your authority or intelligence or ideas of what to do, and more likely to agree with you. And if you come from a place of, again, not trying to run up their pocketbook, but trying to help their patient the best way possible and understanding that relationship between the two and saying, hey, here's where my pet fits in. Here's basically our budget. Because guess what? You start working, and you've probably seen it. You've had clients for 10, 20 years. You say, I know how many kids they have. I know what car they drive. I basically know their entire life because of these experiences that we've shared together. And I know that CT would be the best for them and their patient. And I believe that they could afford it. So I'm going to put this out there. If they can't, I can readjust and say, let's go from there. And so I think putting value back into things, I think it's so easy to say we need to do this, that, and the other. But if you don't have value proposition and transparency and trust behind it, they aren't going to do shit. And they're going to go find somebody else that can do it for cheaper.
Well, what you're saying is basically you're number one, talking as an entrepreneur, which I love. Right? Because there's not a lot of us that want to be entrepreneurs in veterinary medicine. Number two, what you're saying is by doing what you're doing, you give yourself instant integrity. And let me tell you, integrity is what's going to win over every client, every time. Honest, open, telling them what you want to do. They're going to believe you because they see you as integrity. You're not looking at their animal as another number, right? And if you practice as private equity always looks mm-hmm. at your average client transaction or your ACT, as my regional manager used to say, oh, his ACT's not good. Well, you know what? First off, fuck you. And secondly, ACTs are not going to work on early career veterinarians. I never got complained about my ACT. I was pulling in 15 grand a day in procedures and appointments. 15,000 a day. You're gonna fucking yell at me about doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can really go fuck yourself. Oh, now you triggered me. But no, I mean, the thing is, like, that integrity piece is huge,
mm-hmm.
right? But that integrity also comes with emotional intelligence. It all stems back to that one thing. You know Danny
mm-hmm.
very well.
Love Danny. She's great.
Ready Vet Go, right? Yeah. And the one thing me and her always talk about is where's the emotional intelligence going? I mean, seriously. So I was talking to my advisor with my doctorate, and I was like, hey, are there any research papers
mm-hmm.
on the effects of social media on emotional intelligence? There are.
Mm-hmm.
Go read them.
Yeah.
You'll be blown away. You're like, that explains it.
The effect of switching from a sad video to a really happy video back to like
and it doesn't
a dying
affect
person.
Them.
Yeah,
it doesn't
awful.
Affect
and they're glazed over and they're just swiping.
Yes.
It's crazy.
They're just looking through them.
I actually, me and my wife talked about this. We have a kid, and so the algorithms know that we watch baby videos and stuff like that. It started putting like awful hospitalized patients, like kids, like with cancer or debilitating effects. I click on the video and I put, don't show me things like this again, right? Because at the same time, yeah, it's good to, you know, get that information out there. But for us, we're like, that puts such an emotional toll on us because we watch that and we feel it. Whereas a lot of people are just doing that like scroll thing. When I watch videos, I'm invested.
But you won't feel that until you're truly a parent. I mean, you can feel it.
Right.
But once you're a parent.
Yeah, that's a whole different world. I agree.
Dude, I watch videos. Well, I'm not really big using the social media personally.
Mm-hmm.
But I watch videos every now and then one pops up. And like the military dads or moms that would come back. And the kid and surprise the kid in school. I mean, I'm getting chills right now.
Yeah.
Until you're a parent, you don't get it. But you don't understand. The love of a child and the love of an animal towards you is second to none. Second to none. I believe and I hope and I pray my wife loves me, but it's still not the same from as it is of a child or an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting to the human-animal bond piece, there are a lot of people that take that for granted and use it against their people.
Mm-hmm.
like, oh no, 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 no. I know your lab's 15 and barely can move and it's losing a lot of weight, but let's run some lab work when they're there for a euthanasia.
Hmm.
It's not my job to convince a client to euthanize or not.
Yeah.
It's my job to tell them the pros and cons of everything. Just go over everything. Ultimately, it's their decision. If a client came in pretty determined that this was the last day and they brought their kids home from college and, you know, everything is there, don't try to talk them out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to shed a tear. It's okay. It is hard as shit.
Yeah.
It is hard as shit. The worst euthanasias, in my opinion, are the ones where the kids are in college and they waited till Thanksgiving when they came home. And you look at this boy, girl, brother, sister, whatever, and you're like, holy shit, they've had this dog since they were 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
9 years old. I mean, and that's hard, but you don't understand that until you're a parent. But the worst euthanasias, in my opinion, are the ones where the dad got a dog because he became an empty nester, right?
Yeah,
this was his fishing buddy. This was his coffee buddy. This was his walking buddy. Mm. This was like the first, always there to say hello to you as mm-hmm. soon as you walk through the door. When you have a 68, 69-year-old man in hysterics crying,
mm. mm-hmm.
there is no way veterinary school will prepare you for that.
Mm-mm.
And euthanasia got so bad for me last summer that I would go outside and vomit before I had to do them. Everyone, and you know, I was talking to Phil Snow, who owns Orange County Veterinary Assistant School yesterday. And you know, we were talking about when Dr. Hamill retired, and he looked at me and he's like, thank God I do not have to euthanize another animal. And I thought to myself, that guy's lost his rocker. What the fuck is he talking about? But they all add up on you. They mm-hmm. they catch up on you, and it's hard. But it all comes back down to that emotional toll we're talking about, right? Because you have that euthanasia where they're so grateful that you were there. You know, you've been their vet. You were their grandparents' vet. You were their parents' vet. And now it's the kids, you know, that you're seeing. And you go into your next room, and you have a lady who's fucking bitching at you that you charged for a full nail trim when her cat only had three legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and how are you going to learn? Again, how are you going to know that if you didn't go to work in a veterinary hospital before? Yeah. This lady literally had me put in her chart. It would pop up when she checked in. 25% off all nail trims because her cat had three legs. But I was like, your cat has all its teeth. Your cat still needs two people to hold it. Your cat still wants to kill us,
mm-hmm.
but that's okay. I'll take 20. But people who try to fight that bullshit mm-hmm. are the ones who hate the profession.
Sure.
People are like, really? Will $5 kill me? Will $5 kill me?
It will kill your emotional intelligence.
You know, exactly. Just, if you sit there and fight, yeah. just, what the fuck? What are we trying to prove? I mean, yes, it's a business.
Yeah.
But you're talking as an entrepreneur, and you're the idea sure. of losing $5. Oh my God! And she comes in what 10 times a year? That's $50. If you have a $5 million practice and you feel the effects of losing $50 to a client, you are fucked up.
Your money's going somewhere else.
You better look at your account and go, "Where's the money going?" Yeah. Because that's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another thing. If you want to talk about owning the veterinary practice, you're going to make 10%
sure.
of what you make in. Bring
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
Those consultants like, oh, I can get you up to 30%. Really? Because I bet you the two things they're going to tell you. Raise your fees.
Yeah.
Fire some employees.
Work skeleton crew. Yeah, that's true. They do that.
You want to know why? Because those people who say they can tell you how to run a veterinary practice have never worked in a veterinary practice. Mm-hmm. I'm a member of an amazing group. It's called Veterinary Partners. That's where I met Danny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's everyone outside of the veterinary community that helps veterinary medicine. If you love the business side of veterinary medicine, which I do, you go. But there's people that own veterinary clinics that are not veterinarians. And they don't understand why veterinarians won't stay open to 8 o'clock. Because, you know, our clients have jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I raise my hand immediately and I go, what was I doing from 8 to 5? Was that not a job?
Yeah.
I mean, if your daughter, heaven forbid, your daughter doesn't feel well.
Mm-hmm.
Is your pediatrician sitting around at 9 o'clock?
No. No way.
6 o'clock?
No, they're gone.
They're gone. Why is it okay for us as a kid, for anyone to say that's okay that the pediatrician left at 6, but the fucking vet was closed? How many times have you heard that? You guys weren't here.
Yeah. I love hearing that. We were at home just like you. That's what I say.
Yeah. You got to watch the freaking Rams game on mm-hmm. Thursday night. I was here still working. Do you know how many things I've missed? I take this back. How do I put this correctly? I never missed anything of my kids growing up. I went to 3 different recorder concerts for each one of my daughters.
Mm.
Let me tell you, there is nothing better than Beyonce being played by a recorder. But,
I love that.
But it's important that you don't miss anything that your kids are doing. If you're at a clinic that won't allow you to leave for an hour or two to go see your kid's Christmas recital, I don't care if it's a painting expo.
Right.
Then you're at the wrong place. But anyways, I get back to, what the fuck was I going with that? Oh, okay. So yeah, this is what I was going to say. Do you know how many things at the elementary school start at 5 o'clock? Back to school night starts at 5.
Everything.
5:30. And we're like, hey, we work till 6. Well, our teachers work till 2 and they're spending extra hours to do this. Okay. Why is it okay for teachers to leave at 2 and us to do that? Have you ever been asked, are you open on Martin Luther King Day? Are you open up on Columbus Day? Or what? It's not called Columbus
Indigenous
Day.
Indigenous People Day.
Yeah. Have you, you know, are you, oh, you're open on Veterans Day? Yeah, we're not a bank.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the stock market.
Sure.
I mean, dental profession has a right. They usually close the month of December. They're closed, you know, most dentists I know don't mm-hmm. work in December.
A lot of traveling is done. My dentist is closed all of December. And he's in Irvine.
Does anyone give him shit for that?
No. Because it's expected. That's all.
So, you know, I hope I'm not scaring any early career. I'm just telling him the realities of what
mm-hmm.
what lies in front of you. The one thing I will tell you to do, though, is immediately when you are out in practice, and if you do own your practice, you learn who your top 10 clients are immediately. Because even if they're assholes, they still spend the money. They mm-hmm. won't bitch about their bills. They might be a little overbearing. They might drive you crazy. But I mean, we got to a point where at my practice, I put a coffee bar in both practices that I owned. My wife's practice, they told me I was fucking nuts. Why would I do that? That is so stupid. But then all of a sudden they realize, these clients are coming in without animals just to have coffee and talk to the staff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
That's what makes practice amazing. So that's what you need to look for, or that's what you need to create. So yeah, when exactly. So when you say, you know, you want to change veterinary medicine, I'm with you. I was thinking outside the box at all times. What's going to make me different than the 60 other veterinary clinics that people drive by to get to me? I had clients that came from San Diego, San Luis Obispo, Las Vegas, Palm Springs, Phoenix, Kansas, just to come to me because they knew that I would be different. I wasn't, I mean, I might have been closed, but if they really had a concern, they could always, a quick text.
Mm-hmm.
What's 20 seconds of your life? Now, if they text me at midnight, there's a great chance my phone shuts. Well, I'm old now. My phone shuts off at 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
It's set up that way. So they're not going to get a hold of me. But they understand that. They're like, oh, you're probably asleep. Yeah, I was. There wasn't poker that night. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I wasn't out drinking with the fellas.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, I mean, so I one of my Google reviews, a guy actually said, I called him on a Sunday and he was at his daughter's soccer game and he still picked up the phone. Who does that? Now, was my daughter playing at the time? No. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's like, what's that? I'm like, oh, I'm at my daughter's soccer game. That's all I had to say. If I was actually watching my daughter's soccer game, I would not have picked up the phone.
Sure.
But he thought I was at my daughter's soccer game. And he wrote that. He's like, who the fuck picks up the phone at a daughter's soccer game to talk to one of his clients? Dr. G does.
Yeah.
Immediately, online, I have integrity. But then again, there are fucking reviews about me as well that are bullshit, but you can't control what people write, because I think when it comes to electronic word of mouth, which early career, you guys just getting out now, read each one of those with a grain of salt, because back in the day when I went to school, if you wanted to talk shit about someone, you would get your ass kicked. Mm-hmm. You didn't have a keyboard and a monitor to protect you. So this is the way those people are getting back at people. And they only give their side of the story. My first bad online review, it really hit home, this whole problem. I'm like, this is bullshit. Because technically, we're not supposed to respond, right? That's not professionally acceptable, right? You can't do that. That's wrong. This lady literally was sitting in my front waiting room. She comes in late all the time because she has twins. Mm-hmm. I have twins. That was her. And I was like, my office manager has twins, and she comes to work on time every day. Mm-hmm. Same age. But anyways, she would tell everyone what a fucking asshole I am and how I killed their dog. Mm. And then, number one, then why the fuck are you coming back into my practice? And then she would start asking about my receptionist in front of a full waiting room about what's the best way to use heroin, because, you know, that's where she's going. And So I fired her ass. I was like, you print up her fucking records, you FedEx them to her, and you let her know whatever clinic she chooses, we'll email them immediately. That was my first bad review. They were writing about how I killed their pet, and they were sitting in the exam room, and they heard about how I killed another pet because I didn't pick up the phone in the middle of the night, and this and that. But the problem is you have no recourse.
Right.
No recourse. You want. So you cannot, as early career vet, you cannot sit there and be like, oh my God. But the problem is these kids don't know how to not, because all they know is social media. All they know is looking at stuff online, right? So you got to take everything with a grain of salt. Now, what's scary, at least with my older generation, is that this online review thing, we read everything with a grain of salt. Like, you know, there's two sides to every story, whatever.
Sure.
But those younger generations, they think it's the truth, right? How many kids do you know right now that think they get their news from TikTok, Instagram?
Probably 95% of them are getting it from online like that.
Right? I mean, so if they read something online, it's got to be true.
That's so odd to me. I don't know. I fact check
But everything. You're an old soul, dude. Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 31. I'm not that old, though.
You're 31, but you have an old soul. You have a 31-year-old body. Mm-hmm. God bless you for that. And like a 45-year-old brain. Because there comes a time, and I can't explain what it is. Everything just clicks. And you're like, I'm not going to make everyone happy. Joke them if they can't take a fuck, mm-hmm. is what I always used to say.
Yeah,
right?
That's funny.
You just kind of go on with it.
Yeah.
And you realize how out of touch a lot of people are. So you got to learn. And how do you learn that balance? I can't give you that answer. I can't give you that secret sauce. I wish I knew, because I'd bottle that shit up and I'd live in Bora Bora on a yacht.
The dream.
And by the way, being a veterinarian, chances are you're not going to be able to buy that yacht and live in Bora Bora. Mm-hmm. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
But you could go to the Bahamas probably on a pretty nice vacation.
Yeah. Do some relief work over there.
Exactly. Or yeah. Australia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Hawaii.
Need dots everywhere.
Yeah, they do. They do. The other thing that scares me right now, and I wanted to talk to you about, a lot of these just out of school work for a year and then they go do relief.
Yes. I'm very familiar with this.
Doesn't that scare you?
Yeah, because who do you turn to? What if you have to turn to somebody? You are the relief veterinarian. Do you think a year? I don't know. Some veterinarians believe that there are day one ready vets, right? Right out of vet school. There are some veterinarians right now that are probably in your close social circle that will say, you are a day one ready vet. I don't think that exists at all. I think you need a proper mentorship. I think you need some time. That's why my goal is I'm probably likely not going to open my practice until 3 to 5 years after I graduate, depending on my experience.
Yeah, three.
Depending on my experience. I don't know exactly my
path.
And
what I would tell you is don't go buy your own, buy in.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to do a startup, though. I'd love to do a startup, but...
You're out of your fucking mind.
I know. That makes me unapologetically authentic.
But it doesn't. It's cool to wear three hats.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneur, manager, doctor. Because any stress you feel, you can dilute out with the other two hats.
Mm-hmm.
But buy into a successful practice. Learn from the people who owned it. See what worked for them and what didn't. Be truly,
acquisition is your...
You be want. Truly authentic by mm-hmm. changing things the way they did it, status quo.
Sure.
When I bought my wife's veterinary hospital, and I'm sorry if I interrupted you.
No, no.
My father-in-law started it from scratch. He had the same manager for 40 years and the same receptionist for 44 years. They thought the way they were doing it was great. I sat there and I looked over the numbers and I'm like, we're missing 40 cartons of NexGard.
Mm.
Where is that?
In their trunk?
No.
Didn't exist.
So I was talking to the Muriel rep and I'm like, where is the 40 cartons? Oh, they signed up for Greenlight or fucking some stupid fucking thing.
Mm.
Because they want to compete with online pharmacies.
Mm.
And the first thing I'm thinking in my mind was, my father-in-law doesn't have the billions of dollars to keep up with online pharmacy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep up with Costco. You can't keep up with, you name it. Amazon is now online pharmacy. But Amazon wasn't back then. But getting back to it, I was like, okay, so what is the promotion? They buy a year of NexGard, they get four doses for free. So I'm thinking to myself, so they buy a year of flea control, they get 4 months for free. That's almost 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, so what do we get? Oh, we just give you four extra doses of NexGard. So you're giving me four extra doses of NexGard, but I could have sold them another box of fucking NexGard.
Yeah, literally. You just, what are you doing with your time and your money?
We're not competing. Yeah. We're basically saying, you know what? You're going to win because we're losing our fucking ass.
Yeah.
They didn't like that. Also, the manager of 40 years is like, would always tell new technicians or interns or people from the professional veterinary assistant school or senior veterinary students, we're not a teaching hospital.
Hmm.
What? What do you mean we're not a teaching hospital? Oh, I'm sorry. You perfected it. You don't even have your veterinary license, but you've perfected the veterinary medicine, and the way you're doing it is great. I would walk in there. The first week I owned that place, I returned 9,000 pounds of dog food.
Jesus Christ.
They had every diet of Hill's in every size bag.
How expired was it?
Oh, don't worry. If it expired, they would refund
right.
them.
Right.
Oh, are you tracking that? Because I'm pretty sure you're sitting down and watching those bills.
Yeah.
And I love my father-in-law. I am blessed with the greatest in-laws in the world. And he would always be like, man, as long as, and just Dr. Hamill was the same. As long as I could turn on the lights and I can pay my bills and I can get my kids what they want, I'm doing okay.
That's wild.
But I was like, just in the back of my mind, I'm like, what I bought that veterinary practice from my father-in-law, it was worth twice as much. If he was able to follow his books better and not let his manager run it. So getting back to your thing about running your own practice and starting as a startup, you're going to be so worried about doing that, and because you're going to have to look at every penny as a startup. It is going to take away from your veterinary experience. I'm just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're willing to risk that, that's fine. See, at that point, I was excited because I had already run a practice for 15 years. And so I'm like, yeah, let me take that. I turned that practice around from making $1 million a year up to $5.6 million revenue. In 6 years. And guess what? They said what I was doing wasn't going to work. That manager left because she was so disgusted. I brought my manager in. We brought Dr. G's way of doing stuff into that practice. Mm-hmm. We became that teaching hospital. Then all of a sudden, vet assistants and vet techs that were there were going to vet school. We're going to get their license. All of a sudden, we became a place where people knew that we would teach and they would learn. And I always told at least my vet techs that would go off to the vet tech school, my citizens that want to become vet techs, I was like, I just want to let you know that all the employees that work for me, they sit in the front row and they have the highest GPA. And they always look at me, what? And I'm like, trust me. Every single one of those vet techs that went into that vet tech school all passed the vet tech exam on the first try. And that's, again, the importance of good mentoring. That's, the importance of a good culture. That's the importance of making sure, you don't do status quo. I agree with you. I totally agree with you. But I've given you 16 arguments where people said I'm fucking crazy. Why would you fucking do that? Oh, my God, we can't do that. Oh, that's never going to work. Believe in your conviction. Believe in yourself. Believe that you're doing the best you can, and you're going to be successful. And if you don't know what you're doing, ask for help.
Yep.
But the one thing you don't really want is don't always listen to consultants because they don't know what they've never worked it. The only consultant I would trust with my life
the vet.
Is Peter Weinstein. Because he owned a veterinary practice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I know a couple of consultants that they haven't owned veterinary practices, but they've been veterinarians for a while. And,
did they go get their MBA or what did they do?
No, they just started their own consulting company. They just networked with different consulting agencies and they realized, hey, I have the trust that I can build with the veterinarian, which I like because they have worked for 15 years or 20 years. And then they said, you know, I need to take a step back from being a clinician and I want to remold and I can see the kinks and go in and dissect each individual role and say, this may not be working. You might want to try this or even giving them the leeway to say, this isn't working. What do you want to do about it? You know what I mean? So I like that because, I mean, like you said, veterinarians don't want to change. They're not quick to change.
I had a consultant once that told me, you charge Nordstrom prices but dress like you're at Walmart because I wore scrubs.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, is that really the case? So I was like, crap, okay. Slacks.
Oh,
button down polo.
Oh, yeah. You're looking dapper.
With the polo. Yeah, I look fucking fantastic. You're the
Ralph Lauren polo?
My 8:30 appointment was a collection on an Australian Shepherd that ejaculated all over me.
Man. That's great.
I was like, that motherfucker. Yep. He never worked at a veterinary practice. Do you know when I was the most successful? Shorts and a hoodie.
Looking like Adam Sandler.
I had shorts on. And I had a hoodie all my employees, they loved it too. Every 2 months I had a different hoodie made for all of them. Canyon Animal Hospital, I would do one that looked like Notre Dame sweatshirts, one that looked like Cal State Fullerton, and the clients wanted to buy them.
Yeah.
Like, hey, where do I get a sweatshirt? eBay, sorry. But, I got t-shirts made. Because I have no problem with my professional staff wearing a branded T-shirt and scrubs. Everyone had the same uniform. Everyone looked good. I have a problem when someone wears a Scooby-Doo scrub, right. And you got another one wearing the Great Pumpkin, even though it's April. Mm-hmm. And then you got, you know, the other one whose scrubs have probably haven't been ironed in 65 years. Mm-hmm. You know, they come in all wrinkled up. Yeah, I didn't have to worry about that with T-shirts. Guess what? T-shirts always look crisp.
Yeah. And they're cheap.
Right.
And you can mass produce them and you can wash them.
Exactly. But you want, if you're going to charge Nordstrom prices, you better look like you. Have you ever tried to do a splenectomy with a freaking...
Sounds messy.
Yeah, exactly. And that was when before the real nylon gowns came out. It was cloth gowns.
Oh, absorbent.
Absorbent.
Yeah.
I remember one time I had to do an emergency splenectomy on a Saturday. Chemo abdomen. I'm there by myself. But whatever. I'll do it because they couldn't afford emergency clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Got a bloodhound. Did a blood transfusion. Did the splenectomy. And my in-laws, they brought my oldest daughter down, who was 3 at the time. And I had her scrub in for a splenectomy. And that's she awesome. Was sitting there with a little mask. And her eyes were like saucers, right?
Because right.
So we're done and everything. And I take off my gown. And, of course, the blood and she's like, Dad, you're going to be in so much trouble. I'm like, why? You have the bleed all over you. And Mom's not going to be happy.
Mm-hmm. That's hilarious. Just covered.
But the funny thing is, and it's sad to say, you know, I had 3 daughters that didn't want to become veterinarians. And I asked my old mentees that are now veterinarians, you ever going to own a practice? And they said no. And I go, why? And they're like, I've seen the shit you went through. I saw everything you had to deal with. No, thank you. If you do open up a veterinary practice, do it out of California.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder than hell to own a business in California.
Cost of employees is so high. Everything is so expensive in California.
And remember, the employee's always right.
Mm-hmm.
You're guilty until proven innocent in the state of California as an employer. Believe it or not. Yep. They can come at you. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
And the statute of limitations, what, 5 years?
Yeah, which is wild.
Yeah, 4 years and 9 months ago, Dr. G called me a bitch.
Yeah.
I did?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Boom. Lawsuit. Number one, no, I don't do that. But chances are they probably lost 2 or 3 other jobs by then,
mm-hmm.
and they were strapped for cash.
Oh yeah.
And so there are lawyers who are like, oh, let's do this.
And most of the lawsuits, I mean, you look them up.
Right. I had a manager.
The board complaints.
I had a manager that I let go because she was just. I mean, we were 6 months behind on bills. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because she would handwrite checks. I'm like, let's go through, you know, online. No. Okay. So I let her go. She worked for us. I loved her. She was a great lady, but I had to let her go. You know? They always say, to cut the dead fruit on the vine so the vine takes off.
Mm-hmm.
And she sued me for improper termination. And her lawyer calls me and said, these timesheets, they're all messed up. We're going to get you on this. And I go, those timesheets were her responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And know what really scared me was even though she was a salaried employee, she still clocked in and out. Red flag.
What the hell?
Red, because she had in her mind.
She's going to get away with it.
She was going to use that against me.
Mm-hmm.
There's people out there that are like that. But again, if, like I said, if you never worked in a veterinary hospital before you go to vet school, how are you going to know that all this shit even is possible
right.
to happen?
Right. And it's not even to scare people away from it. I think it's to get a sense of understanding.
Preparedness.
Right? Like you talked about euthanasias earlier, and it's not that it's ever going to get easier. It's that you're going to know what to expect most of the time. Most of the time you can know what to expect emotionally, physically, in the exam room. I mean, one goal of mine was in one of the summers at the clinic, I said, I want to do every euthanasia. Every euthanasia that comes in this door, give me it from beginning to end. From me placing the catheter, because we put catheters in on our euthanasias.
Did you sedate them first?
Yeah, yeah. A little sedation, you know, a little
catheter. That's an important fact Number one, if you sedate the dog, the owner will sit with it. It gives them extra time. You can do the catheter in the room in front of them. Mm-hmm. The animal won't react.
Correct. Yeah. And so for me, like, that was, I mean, I'm really happy a veteran, veterinarian that is, you know, been practicing a long time has basically said, in this moment, this is not our moment, right? And we should give them the most peaceful way possible for them to embrace this moment together, right? And it's this triad of the client, the patient, and you. And that has to work symbiotically. And if one of those is out of whack, you just ruined an entire experience for someone's lifetime.
I would argue that it's the patient, the client, and then you.
Well, not in order. I'm just saying in
sync. Oh, I thought that was the order.
In sync, you know, like in a triangle, right? So I'm just...
Because when push comes to shove, the patient's first.
100%. 100%. We that's our job, right? That's our job at the end of the day. And so, I took that on, and, you were talking about the old guy with, I had that. I had the old guy, wife died, old yellow lab, you know.
His last thing to his wife, right?
This was it. This was it. And I got to experience that moment, and it's making my hair stand up now.
I'm starting to tear up because
it's new for me, right? It's so new for me, but I'm really happy that I was encouraged to embrace that experience, because it's something that I have to look forward to. It's not something I'm dreading to go do. And, I placed the puppy pad down on his lap. I said, I can set him up on your lap. I let him know he may defecate. It's perfectly normal when we let him go. This may happen. It's not always, but it may happen. And, I had my three syringes, and I said, this clear one is just going to clear the line out. It's going to make sure everything goes in okay. And this, white milky one, I would say, or something, this is just going to make him really relaxed.
This is what killed Michael Jackson.
Yeah, exactly. I don't say propofol because of that. People get freaked out. They hear that. They again, it goes back to what they've seen on social media.
Alfaxolone's better.
Right. And I've heard that. But, different protocols, different places. I don't own them. I don't choose the drugs. I just go with their protocols. And for me, I basically just said, hey, look, this is going to make him feel really good. This is going to take away everything. And then this, pink or whatever, you're using, this is going to make him go to sleep. And I'm going to let you know when I push each one. And you tell me when you're ready. And then I walk out of the room. I say, you let me know. You knock on that door when you're ready for me to come in. This is your you time. This is for you guys. And then they'd knock and I'd come in and I would just slowly walk through it. And I got to experience very different reactions from people. And for me, I just said, Garth, you need to take every experience that you get from these appointments and translate them to when you're the veterinarian in the practice and you're doing things and you're reading people and you're understanding what's the next thing you should say. Because when I'm in that exam room, I'm already thinking, what's the next thing I can say by the way they're reacting to me?
Correct.
Because it's going to change every single time. It's not linear at all. There's nothing linear about that talk, and it changes. And it changed in the 20 or so that I did that summer. Between the cats, the dogs, everything. I mean, we had a bird come in, and I was like, what the hell? We don't do birds in here, but they got hit by a car, and, you do what you can. And so I sat there, and one of the days I sat outside after, I was like, damn, I got to go. That was tough. Like, we're humans. That's tough. I start getting flashbacks to my pets or my parents' pets and thinking, oh, my parents could have been in that situation alone or whatever. And you just start to be empathetic and realize we're all human in this moment and we all have that vulnerability, but it's how you react to that situation that sets you apart from other people. It's what you say next that matters most to that person.
That's that soft skill you're talking about.
And it's fucking tough sometimes because you don't know what to say. And saying nothing is sometimes okay.
Crying is okay.
Yeah.
Hugging them is okay.
Yeah.
Other little tricks. If you have that crazy lab that has that horrible osteosarcoma, but it comes in happy as a clam, you go find fucking ice cream, chocolate, and everything while the sedation's kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
Clients fucking love that.
Yeah, I like that.
You make it, you celebrate it. I mean, celebrate this companionship that they had. And the easiest thing you can say to a client is how blessed you were to have such a great companion.
Yeah.
Those simple words, how blessed you were to have such a great companion. That's the best thing to say. When you don't have anything to say, when you're coming up with something and you're like, what do I do?
Right.
You just say those words and they will look at you in a different light. Because how many people are I mean, in life, like I told my business partner here now, I'm like, I don't trust anyone that hasn't grown up with an animal.
Yeah.
Sorry. And, yeah. You know, and this is his first dog. And he's like, this fucking dog, I don't know what I'm going to do when I lose him. Mm. He's my everything. Mm. He loves me. He comes to me. He spends all his time with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, how blessed you are to have such a great companion. Because in life, as humans, all we're looking for is companionship.
100%, yeah.
Some of us are blessed, like I am. I've been married. I've been with my wife, wow, almost 30 years now. We've been married for 25. Happily for two. No, I'm just kidding.
Edit that out.
No. But no, I mean that's what you're looking for in life. Mm-hmm. For humans. We're looking for someone to go through this grind and these ups and downs and all that. And that's what, when you find a practice that you're able to go through life, you're in the right practice. If you find a practice where you're not able to go through life and no one really gives a shit that's about you and what you're doing with your free time and how your vacation was. And
that's if you're able to separate work from play.
Right.
A lot of people's perception, at least younger generations, they want to love what they do. They want to have fun in what they're doing. That's great if you can find a place. But if you force a place, to be that place for you, it's never going to work.
Because veterinary medicine should be work and play together.
Yeah,
it's because supposed to be fun. If you can't be fucking crazy and have a good time and play music in the treatment area and like have a dance off, you know, or run a veterinary technician Olympics, or just give them crazy things to do to blow off that steam, then you're not in the right place.
Absolutely.
Then you might as well go, you know, it's like might as well be an accountant.
Yeah, literally. You want a desk job, go somewhere else.
Exactly. So these are all things that are very important for people to see. And again, like you said many times, all veterinary hospitals are different. And just because you're at one veterinary hospital doesn't mean how the profession's going to be. Find the right veterinary hospital. Love what you do. You know? So, yeah, like, early on, you're like, what happened to the cheerleaders? I think the biggest issue veterinary medicine's facing is that all the legacies have disappeared. They retired and left. All the legacies that were making veterinary medicine fun are no longer involved. They need to get back in here. They need to be the cheerleaders. They need to be the parents watching the soccer game for their grandkids or their kids. They got to be, you know, well, come on, let's go. You got this. I mean, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now, because I am a cheerleader for this profession. I think everyone has the potential of being an amazing veterinarian. But I think they have to understand the concept that day one, you are not ready. If you think you are, fan-fucking-tastic. You're not going to be. There's no way you're going to be prepared for everything that this profession is going to be ready to throw at you.
You know, just enough to not know anything.
You know, just enough to make you fucking scary.
Yeah, that's right? True.
And that's what worst client you can have is an RN.
Oh, yeah.
They know just enough to make them fucking scary. Right? But then again, I always tell them that. I'm always that obnoxious guy that's like, oh, you're an RN. Ah, shoot, we're going to have a tough time together. And they'd always start laughing.
Right.
Right? Because RNs, number one, first and foremost, are what? Patient advocates.
Sure.
So they're advocating for their pet, first and foremost. And that is so ingrained in them that it's going to be hard. But they also think they know medicine, and they don't know medicine better than you. Google does not know medicine better than you. Because medicine is not only what the textbooks is teaching you. Medicine is how you're going to put it into, how you're going to take theory into practice, right? And it's about learning the game, which I've said probably 1,000 times. And I have to say, Garth, I think you know the game. I'm a little worried about the 92% that are still not in your class. Mm-hmm. That's let's just call it 90%. Let's call it 80%. Let's be even 75%. Mm-hmm. Let's be really generous.
Yeah.
75% of your class is not learning the game now. And I would take a bet that that's probably the truth at every single vet school.
I would at least put a dollar on it. Going back to that. You know, the thing is that you bring that up. Without getting into too much trouble, for example, I will say last year I said I was encouraged to network more, to go out and learn from you guys that have been through it.
Who told you that?
A lot of people. Weinstein, Dan Phillips, Dan Markwalder, a lot of those guys. You're only as good as who
the
you
heavy
know.
Hitters.
Heavy hitters.
100%. That know
Danny,
success.
Danny. I mean, everyone. All
yeah,
of them.
The people that know how to be successful in the practice.
Yeah, or who have been successful.
Right.
Or no concepts of success. You know what I mean? Like, there's
okay,
so many.
Hold on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Any professors?
One. Actually, two. Two is that it, I can think of.
Is that a problem?
Absolutely. Okay. The disconnect is there, of course. Okay. I can't sit there and say it's not. But, you know, my issue with this is, for example, we had an exam, okay? And we had the ability to retake an exam after a session. So you could fail it, and you could come back and retake it at the end if, when, you know, studying for it. That's great. That's cool. That's in their curriculum. I appreciated that. Well, a conference fell on an exam day. And I said, I've got to go to that conference. For one, it's free. And two, it's a great way to maybe represent the school, maybe go network, go learn some things, watch some CEs. I'll go to all the practice management ones, because why would I go see Leonard Foreign Body right now when I'm in my first or second year of school? I don't even know how to do a foreign body. You know, it's cool to watch, but I mean, I could also watch it online, and what they're doing is a little more advanced for me. So I said, I'm going to learn like the soft skills, you know, like, you know, communication labs and stuff like that. And I was told that I would get a zero on that exam if I went. And I said, I disagree. I'm not understanding. Why could I take it a day before? Could I take it, you know, monitored online with somebody who was going to the same conference, who agreed, that was a professor at the school, that agreed to watch me take the exam at the same exact time from the hotel room, was still denied that and fought for that. And I called somebody and I said, look, I am really pissed off right now, because what I'm trying to do is not go on a vacation to a conference, but I'm trying to challenge myself, to grow myself, to learn new things that I can bring back to my school classmates, who all were afraid when they heard that email. When they got that email, they all dropped out. None of them went. None of them wanted to go. They're like, oh, no, I can't fail an exam.
And you think there's going to be a difference between that mind frame and 10 years out?
No, it's going to be the same. They're going to do the same things.
They're not going to push themselves out of their comfort zone.
And so I said, screw it. Well, I have my fallback. I don't know what I was going to get on it. Well, I took a zero on it, and I retook it, and I did great on it. And I was like, and so, like I was saying, I called somebody that was higher up in a corporation, and I said, look, I'm getting beat down over here, because I feel like I'm laying down logical evidence of why I should go, and, you know, and I'm getting some support from some staff and, you know, no from others. How do I change their mind? And he just goes, you're never going to do that. He's like, you're not going to be able to change academia's mind. They're very set in stone. You are going to waste more time, energy, and effort that it's going to push you into resenting them. And you don't want to do that. You just need to play the game, get out of the game, and change the world of veterinary medicine after. And I was like kind of stuck when I heard that. I was like, well, that's kind of a rough advice. But then I was like, but also my realist background is like, okay, well, that makes sense. Why would I try? I don't have the ability to change that mindset right now. But he said, but you do what is in your best interest. And I was like, shit, I got to go. Because I shouldn't go. Talking to my wife, you know, trying to console people that know more than me, that are much smarter than me, and that's why I married her. But I just said, what do I do? And then at the end I said, I've always known I'm going to go. And I just went.
Wow.
And I don't regret it. I'm actually more happy that I went. I am so much more happy that I went, because I met so many amazing professionals and companies that maybe that was the moment that I set up my career in that 1 3-day trip. Maybe I met my future boss or my future mentor or somebody who's a neurologist, a cardiologist, or whoever that can help me. And they say, I had dinner with him when I was in Orlando or Vegas. I had dinner with that guy when he was just a vet student. I got a perfect project for him. I want him to do blah, 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 blah. Or would I have been happier getting a better grade on my exam? And I think that...
C equals DVM.
It's all the same. It's all the same. And so, yeah, I just... I get really flustered with when people become so focused, hyper-focused on that, that that's defining who they're going to be in the future. Test scores, GPAs. None of that's going to matter. No one that's going to hire you is going to say,
what was your GPA?
No client is going to come in and say, oh, you had a 3.8? Oh, I need to see a 3.9. No one's ever going to say, what'd you get on your NAVLE? If they're asking you what you got,
93.
Red flag. Run the other way. Fire the client.
There's no client. I never in my life had a fucking client ask my GPA. And that's the crazy thing. In my doctorate program now, I have kids. I got my MBA. They were worried about their grades. I'm in my doctorate program now. They're worried about their grades. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the fuck? I actually know. Do you ever go on LinkedIn and see people who posted their GPA from their college?
I've seen that with the NAVLE scores. I'm like, why are you posting that? Just say you passed.
Okay. Well, I got a 9. Yeah. I got a 96. I got a 96 on the California State Board exam when it used to be a real exam. Yeah. Now it's a fucking law bullshit.
I don't have to take it.
Exactly.
It's to my school.
Exactly.
Which is awesome.
That's such shit.
Yeah, I'm like, one less test. Thank
you. Oh, my God.
That stressed me out.
Yeah, it was funny. Well, do you know how many Davis grads would fail the California board exam?
How many?
They only had a 65% pass rate. God. And they dedicated a whole semester class to pass that exam. And, of course, us from Illinois, there are 13 of us that came out. 13 of us passed. Why? Well, I had the pig version. And what did they teach us at Illinois?
Oh, God.
Swine.
Swine. Death by swine.
The first one of the veterinarians I used to work for, their whole California State Board exam was rabbit theory genealogy.
Oh, God.
On my national board exam, I had a question. What was the thickness of the fat at the dorsal fin on a beluga whale? 1 inch, 2 inch, 3 inch, 5 inch. I went with 5. I don't know if I got it right or not. But I was thinking, God, they have a lot of blubber, so I'm going with it. But, I mean, I guess that would make sense because if you had to do an injection, right? Mm-hmm. How big of a needle do I need? But.
You're reminiscing on old times, getting flustered.
Oh, well, the thing is, like, I mean, that's a crazy thing. Like, that, I'm an open book, yeah. And I want to make sure my listeners know that I am an open book. And sure. I love to talk about this shit because I agree it's just as stupid as it was back then as it is now. But the fact is that you look at your school and what you wanted to do, and they're like, no, no, no. That shows you right there that veterinary medicine is afraid of change.
Yeah, 100%. Especially in academia.
If you were my student and you asked me that, I'd say, sure, why don't you take a day before you go?
Yeah, I really question what that would affect. I really don't understand
it. Oh, you would tell everyone that was on the exam?
Oh,
you would,
I bet.
Oh, yeah, you would tell everybody, oh, he's going to cheat. Oh, all of a sudden, my grades are going to go up. Any professors in your school just try to fail you? We had one.
No.
He took pride in failing at least 10 veterinary students a year. Can you believe that shit?
It's a vendetta from somebody that's bitter.
Oh, his name was Merle Manahar, and he taught cardiology. And you couldn't even what are those called? Whirling eddies?
What is that?
Where the blood gets turbulent in the heart.
Oh, in the atrium?
Yeah, and look at that. I still remember that shit. But he called it waddling ertles.
I just call it turbulence.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much shit we could talk about.
Yeah.
I hope you come back.
I will. 100%. This is fun. I thrive off this shit. This is the conversations that we need to be having. These are the conversations people are afraid to have, and I don't care. I would rather have those conversations be out there and be challenged rather than stay in the darkness and never see what have came of them. Because if I can influence or we can talk and just one person's listening and one person makes a change in their lifestyle and that directly affects veterinary medicine, whether it's a tech, a business owner, a receptionist, and they go back to their workplace and they say, holy shit, my actions do have repercussions, or my actions have consequences, whether it be good or bad. I would like to change them rather than being in this I'm comfortable stage. Comfortability didn't do anything for anyone.
Did they teach you that in vet school?
No.
Exactly.
But you have to want
Because they teach you the status quo. They teach everyone the same way they've been teaching for 40 years. I don't know the answers. I'm not saying I do. But I think we need to have a lot of crucial conversations that people are afraid to have. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. Having educated, crucial conversations. Maybe some good will come. Maybe some change will come. Maybe it won't.
Yeah.
But we're not trying to have it. You look at research articles on burnout in veterinary medicine. Basically, oh, it's there. These are some things you can do about it. Why is it there?
Yeah. We're and trimming the branches. We're not going to the roots.
You're right. And that's where my doctorate's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's crazy is that I'm breaking down my doctorate into three parts. The third part's actually going to be the burnout piece. I want to talk about, let's talk about some of these things. And I was totally poo-pooed. I wasn't totally poo-pooed. It just, I didn't feel comfortable. Because you got to talk about the feminization of the profession. Now, I have an amazing wife who's a full-time veterinarian. I have three daughters. So I'm girl, dad, woman power all the way. I love the fact that my wife makes more money than me now. Love it. Mm-hmm. But there, you got to look at what type of household are they in. Are they in a traditional household? Or even though the wife is working full time, she still feels responsible to set up the carpooling, the doctor's appointments, and all those things. Or are they progressive, where everything's truly shared? That's not being discussed. People are like, oh, it's just feminizing. What the fuck does that mean? Granted, this profession was created in the barn in the 1800s by a bunch of guys. And if you look at the 1973 Iowa State graduation, all men's in tuxedos. Look at the 23. 87% women. We need to change. The profession has changed genders. Mm-hmm. Females are working a double. They're working as not only a man, but also as a woman.
Right.
In a male-gendered profession. Gendered male. Why is it gendered male? Because all the rules were created by men. Things need to be different. There needs to be flexible work hours. There needs to be time off for if moms want to go do stuff with their kids.
Sure.
They can't be shunned upon for that. And people are like, oh, no, the state laws don't allow that. There are so many ways that you shun a person that are
absolutely
not illegal.
Yeah.
And that needs to be addressed. But again, the profession needs to change. Our clients, they have jobs until 5. Why don't you stay open until 8? What the fuck?
That's the good thing about privatized medicine, though.
Yeah. You can do what you want.
I'm for the privatization of veterinary medicine, 100%. Right. I think there is a place for corporate. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh.
Well, you don't know any different.
Oh, bad corporate.
You don't,
but
you
don't
know
I
the difference.
I don't have the experience. I just have other people's experience.
Yep. That's the problem.
So.
Yep.
But that's my entrepreneurial mindset. Who knows?
You're a
grinder? Who knows what's to come? I'm excited.
Garth, you're a grinder. Yeah. You know what it's going to take. You've seen it all. Well, you haven't seen it all. You've seen enough to know where you need to be. And hopefully 8, 9, 10% of your class is like that.
Yeah, I wish there were more. I just want those people in my corner, and I want to bring as many people as I can.
Right. So the take-home message for the listeners right now are work on your soft skills starting tonight.
Yeah.
You got some free time? Go volunteer at a clinic. Yep. Just sit there. Just see what it's going to be like. Because if you didn't, let's put it really simple. How do people know they do not like Brussels sprouts?
They eat them.
They've tried them before.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very simple equation.
Yeah. I mean, I volunteered at the Street Dog Coalition, and I never wanted to do any type of shelter or volunteer work really professionally. You know, I didn't think I was going to be a shelter vet, but I did it, and I realized how much I love people, right? And how good it made me feel to make a difference in somebody's day. Like
when they adopted a dog, right?
No, but just treating their pets, you know, homeless populations, yeah. Pets. I mean, you don't realize the magnitude of the profession and how diverse it is that you can do that. And it doesn't take much to do that. And a lot of vet students are going to say, I don't have time. I'm busy doing this. I'm doing that. I'm studying. I'm reading Miller's, whatever the hell they're doing. You do have time because you have enough time to complain about it. So take that time and say, and just, I challenge
even
people.
Even if it's an hour.
Right. Challenge people. Go to a veterinary clinic nearby your house. That's a specialty. That's an emergency. That's an urgent care, whatever. Take 4 hours out of your day. Go ask them, hey, you know, I want to introduce myself. I'm Garth from, you know, XY vet school. I would love to be able to learn X, Y, or Z from you. Maybe I could shadow you. Is that a possibility? 99% of them that I've reached out to have said, absolutely, come on down whenever you want. Because one, they want to help the profession, right? They love people. It's free labor for them. Granted, if you're not that challenged, you know, if you're not clinically challenged.
Okay, now as an entrepreneur, I'm going to stop you right there.
It's
going to
be more time consuming and
expensive. I'm
going
to stop you right there.
Yeah.
If you get fucking hurt and you're not on the insurance,
mm-hmm.
that's very expensive.
Yes, absolutely. But those are the minor things. I mean, you can sign things. I mean, it is California, so stuff only goes so far.
Right.
But it doesn't take much to do that, you know. And even if it's just a conversation with that veterinarian about client, you know, exam room etiquette or whatever it is, you just gained a new skill and you can decide if you want to use that skill in your career. You may learn something. You may teach me something. I go, you know, that's just not going to work for me. But it's going back to the Brussels sprout thing. I attempted to understand and apply what you've given me and it just doesn't work for me. That's okay. And that's going back to the learning zone and putting yourself in that learning zone at all times.
Well, remember, we're practicing.
Yeah.
In order to become your do you think Michael Phelps became Michael Phelps overnight?
No.
Do you think Simone Biles became Simone Biles overnight?
Yeah.
Do you think Secretariat, the racehorse, was Secretariat overnight? Hmm. They trained and trained and trained to become the best.
Sure.
And even if you ask Michael Phelps, Simone Biles, you can't ask Secretariat. But if you ask those two phenoms, were they perfect? What do you think they'll say?
Hell no. They'll still say that they're in the rough draft.
They're still in chapter one.
Yeah, they still will say that they're not the greatest they want to become.
And that's the mindset you got to have.
Yeah.
You got to have that mindset. Man, this was awesome.
This was awesome. Thanks for having me on, and I'm really excited and inspired, and can't wait to see what we're gonna do about it, really, as vet students. So, I just challenge everyone out there to live by this, replay it back, and play it again.
That's right. And you know, remember, if anyone has any questions, Dr. G at VetMed IT, just give me questions. And actually, in our studio, I'm hoping to have phone lines.
Nice, yeah. Take some live callers.
That'd be great, man.
Hey, I'm down to partake in that. I'd love it.
Yeah, my closing words, not everyone who owns an animal is crazy, but all crazy people own animals.
I love it. Thanks.
Okay, we'll see you.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'll be here Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
You can come whenever you, like I said, man, just let me know.
I stand on the edge of my street with a knife held in my back. Not an enemy to secretly creep to position at the